meeting is now being recorded.
So, if we go back to the morning, should we try to summarize
what we did?
Do we need something beyond the action points? Because that's what we said first, that we should have a summary of kind of a minute of the morning session.
So is there anything beyond the action points which we need to summarize?
I don't think so. Action points
are fine. Yeah. Well, we said that we don't have any minutes if we don't have any summary. So there's no minutes.
Right.
Minutes from the meeting.
So
so we could ask write a text to
clarify that we have gone through it and that we have created some action points. And this one could be included in the minutes, that's an addendum.
Would you want to just say that much, that we've actually discussed these items and developed some action points around it based on the discussion, or do you want to summarize the discussion as well?
I don't think it's needed.
Okay. So then that part, I guess, we can cover, that we just went through the comments in the document and developed different action items for each of the items, and those are obviously already recorded in the Google Doc.
Will you write the minutes? Or?
I can do that. That's not a problem. But only that much, right? Mm-hmm. Not much more than that.
Right, but then at least, I mean, we have something to go back to. Okay, what did we do then? So, we went through this, and if we saw this with the we have something.
All right, so then moving on. What I'll do is I'll capture that and I'll circulate at the end of the day or something.
Thank you.
So next thing on the agenda is start discussing the variants. So we have actually multiple documents on this. So how would you want to organize this, or where would you want to start?
So let's talk about the documents that we received. There are two pieces.
Yes.
Oh, Daniel, right? Okay. So the first one is the one titled Farmer IP Comments on Latin Binance, which is in response to our letter, which was a response to the IP's August 29th email. So I think we should, and the second one is the IP review of Binance for the proposed Latin SDR. So I would suggest let's start with the IP comments, because that addresses the principles that we were trying to finalize. And once those principles are discussed among us and we agree on path forward, then we can review the proposals with those new principles or revised principles being established. So okay, there you go, Simon. Thank you.
So all the documents links were shared by Mariana.
Yes.
These are Google documents. If anybody needs them, I can re-forward that email, otherwise.
Yeah, let me just open that. Mariana, good in the weekend thing, right? Yeah. Sorry, comments.
We're on this document.
Yes.
Take some time for Google to really drop you in and see.
All right. So how do we do this? We just do a reading session, and then we stop to discuss the points made by the IP on our letter? Okay. Let's do that.
I mean, we session chunk by chunk.
Exactly, yeah. Just go through top to bottom until we finish the letter and extract the information that is being directed, suggested, recommended, what have you. Okay? So let's do that. The very top overview.
Sorry to interrupt, but yes. Is that okay that I capture whatever we want to capture as a summary of the analysis on this document?
Yeah, as long as
in red.
Yeah, as long as you write this in the top.
Like you did in the other
document. Yeah, on comment. No, here on comment.
You could also do comment.
Yes, that's fine. That's fine.
Right. Yeah, comment.
That way we can just keep capturing and moving on. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so I'll start reading out loud, and I'll stop in each paragraph, and then we'll just discuss whether there is something valuable from there that we need to capture, comments separate, or action items to follow. So we'll start at the very top, overview. In response to a discussion document from the Latin GP asking for clarification, the IP presents the following observations. It is hoped that the Latin GP will find this helpful in coming to a determination which variants to define and what rationale based that decision on. Okay, so they're very straightforward, just the opening. Nature of Latin script. The IP agrees with the GP that the Latin script contains no or almost no semantic variants. Semantic variants imply a change in spelling without change of meaning. There are some languages like English or some spelling alternations, like the use of diacritics in works like Naif, or the use of ligatures like OE or an AE may be optional. However, these cases do not appear to rise to a level that would be addressed as semantic variants to the root.
Okay. The the only case I can think of is the German sharp S. Where the sharp S versus the double S, I don't know if it's a change of spelling, but it's a change of writing, if you will.
I think
I agree with that. That's correct. It's not one of the things to address in Latin script at a script level. Like, there is semantic variation, but it's mostly from language to language. There's very little
script level
cross language, which is cross language or cross aerial or something.
Is there anything cross language?
Yes, of course. For example, sharp S is cross country, and that it is used in I guess in Germany and in Austria. I think Switzerland, they don't do it.
So it's very specific to certain to certain countries.
It's specific to German. It's specific to one language, but it's shared across several countries. So I would generally agree to the statement. That's what I'm saying. It's fine. It's right what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see an issue with that.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
No.
And it also doesn't affect what we were discussing earlier.
Yep. All right, let's continue. The hallmark of the Latin script is that it is used by so many different languages, the point just was made, each extending the basic set of 26 letters with additional ones, typically derived from the addition of diacritic to an existing shape. There are exceptions to both principles. Not all languages use all 26 basic letters, and some add additional basic shapes. So that's true. Any comments? Let's continue. Generally, then, one can expect a native user of the Latin script to be aware that diacritics are an important means of distinguishing characters and to be able to detect the substitution of an unfamiliar one. This counteracts the issue that diacritics are generally small.
Well, we disagree with that. You can detect the substitution of diacritics that you are accustomed to. But if say you are accustomed to a dot above as a diacritic, if you come across an acute as a diacritic, maybe you will detect that, or maybe you will just think it's a font difference. So I think they're a bit over-optimistic about how readily people will detect differences. And after all, the vast majority of languages use some diacritics, but it's a very small subset of the total array of diacritics that actually get used. So you're going to see diacritics that you are not accustomed to, and sure, you can, I mean, you can tell the difference between a diuresis and a sedilia, no problem. But when you get to some that are relatively similar, the chances that you will distinguish them drop dramatically.
I think it is very true. Swedish uses two or three diacritics, but mostly two that are important. One is diuresis over A and O. Actually, they form different letters. And then the other is ring above A. When it comes to diuresis, that they could be written differently. I mean, they could write it as like a tilde over, or you can double acute. That could go very well as diuresis in for a Swedish, I mean, a style, font style. So if you see that, you recognize it as A with diuresis. It's just that it's written differently. Not the
in handwriting though.
In handwriting, definitely.
Or not in type form, or in type form as well.
Oh yes, also in type form, but you will, depending on the font shape, the font shape could be that it's more like handwritten, and then it could be natural to have the tilde over that. Or it would be considered to be a little bit strange.
So I guess the question would be, would it be possible to provide some documentation which can show that within Swedish variation of diuresis?
Well, it's not that much that it could be used. Well, the usage is not large in written language. The use of it is marginal, but the question is how it would be perceived by the readers. So the readers would definitely accept it as a variation.
Right. I guess my question was more not from a font perspective, but from a discussion perspective. Is there, for example, a published paper which discusses this kind of variation in written Swedish?
I don't know. I could
search for it. Because, to some extent, I'm sympathetic to exactly this example, because we do exactly this in Arabic script, where in some letters we have two dots, three dots under, or two dots above. And, I've been sort of doing it myself as well. When we're writing, sometimes we write two dots, or sometimes we're lazy and we don't want to lift the pen. So we just do like a squiggly thing, which is like a tilde, to represent the two dots.
But the thing is, When I was learning to write script in school, this was the proper way of doing it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That even in Arabic,
it was not in school. Yeah,
in school, but
yes.
when we use it usually, it's different.
Back in the 50s, 60s, people were more using this kind of handwriting than today.
As opposed,
but then. So this was the proper way of writing it.
And what was the improper way?
What's the
improper way now?
This is the letter.
You're speaking about the basic letter shape, or you're speaking about the modifier, or you're speaking about both?
Well, actually,
because now you have variations in both. You can see that, right?
Yeah.
So you actually mean this one, but that is.
Well, this is the handwritten shape of that one.
So it's original then.
Well, the original
I'm not sure.
Originally, the original handwritten, right? Computers came afterwards.
Yeah. So this is the printed version. In handwriting, the A is almost always like this.
Yes. And this is one, and this is, I think, the more important thing about this example you're giving right now, which I see. So you are now making reference to a modifier, and we're pointing out the different shapes where you said, this is correct, this is incorrect.
No.
At the same time, without discussing it, you wrote two different letter shapes, which in Unicode are two different code points. And that is what I was referring to earlier.
No. They're different. They're the same code point. His math is our input method system right now. He's using different fonts. But it's the same code point.
Well, it could be.
I'll have to look at. No, it's not. Yeah. What I'm saying is the shape of the letter.
Okay, so.
The glyph.
The glyph is different. And it's not form variation, it's code point level variation.
This is the same code point.
No. Code point is what it's unique. Fonts can have code point can have different fonts.
It could be the O instead.
Yes. They say code point. Matt is writing in both cases it's the same code point.
Always handwrite code points.
It's the same abstract character, but it's represented differently, using different shapes.
I'll look
shapes.
The code points up, and then I'll come back to you, okay?
Yeah.
I understand the difference. Those are different things.
Yeah, so different representations.
No.
Yes.
Different.
What?
Same abstract character, two different representations.
Right. So this one.
Ha.
So,
that's why you have the math thing.
See? That's the math thing.
Exactly.
And those two are the same abstract.
Oh, no. 0, 2, 5, 1.
Because we don't never use that code point in Swedish.
You don't use that code point in Swedish, but both are things which you may consider an A.
Yes.
Those are part of the handwritten variation.
Okay.
So
it's like a 0, 2, 5, 1.
Exactly. And the other one, for example.
Yeah, but that's alpha. That's another code point.
Would be the 0, 0, 6, 1.
But what?
6, 1 is the Latin small letter A.
Well, they have different names. I'm saying.
No, they are different characters. Because they are different characters.
To you?
No.
But that's not what you learn in school. Because that type of variation between the alpha and the A. Is what originally sparked the A. And this is one example of such variation. I'm just saying, look at the way they are shaped differently. It's the same variation you encounter between alpha and A.
Yeah, that's a discussion for InScript reading.
Yeah, the same discussion comes up if you go down in this same document about 3/4 of the way where they're talking about the cross-script variants. They say, A, the 0, 0, 6, 1, and the Greek alpha, 0, 3, Baker 1, are blocked because the glyphs are nearly identical due to font design, unquote.
What did you do?
So I crossed out the A because that was bad. It's better with
okay.
O.
Okay.
It's better with O because
the
middle O there would not be confused with some other code point, but the three are the same. The same letters.
What
the
I'm
saying, the same abstract character.
The point I was trying to make.
Yeah, that's true. All the four are there.
Same abstract.
Yeah.
Different representation.
Yeah.
Okay. The point I was trying to make is the identity in perception of different modifiers can also apply to different base shapes that is entire letters.
Sure.
Yes.
So the same problem you pointed out now with the tilde as opposed to diuresis, may apply to certain letters.
Yes.
Right now we're still at the diacritic level,
yes,
and we're discussing that.
Yes.
The question is only how far do they extend across the script using community? And are they limited to single languages, single countries, or geographic areas? And where do we basically do the threshold?
Right.
Where do we do the cutoff?
So in Hungarian, you will never mix those two because they are distinct.
Precisely.
With double accused and diaresis, because they use a different letters or different modifiers in Hungarian.
And
so there you can never mix them up.
And I do not think we have modifiers, different modifiers, which are mixed up across the entire script using zone. So I don't think we're worried about semantic mix-up, because in the Swedish case, in the example you gave, semantically there's an identity, kind of.
Yeah, well, if we call that semantic.
Well, semantic based on graphics somehow.
Mm.
Well, what I'm saying is
grapheme.
Yeah, they consider it the same grapheme, exactly.
Yes.
Different graphs for the same grapheme. What I'm saying is that there is that level of variation, but then there's also the visual level, and I think we need to be more concerned about that one, because we will probably not find such cases which you can demonstrate across the whole script using community. However, when it comes to cognition, to just simply looking at something and seeing whether it's the same or it's different, this is, I think, where it becomes more difficult. And this depends a lot more on psycholinguistics, on cognitive factors, and stuff like this. And it's not about not understanding that those are different things. It's about seeing it. So understanding is a cognitive process which happens kind of after seeing something, hearing something.
And that's the point you raise in our letter.
Yeah.
They came back. So I can, we can skip that, the reading, and go straight to the point. So the roots on LGR, can we point, that's in the nature of variance, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth paragraph. The nature of variance, I think that's in the second page.
Oh, so what are we doing with the first?
No, nothing. Since he's bringing it up, we will need to read the whole thing before going into discussion, because if we're going to discuss paragraph by paragraph, we may run in the wrong place, right? But just to answer that and maybe prepare, can you scroll down two more paragraphs? There you go, yeah. So it says, right, the roots on LGR are supposed to be applied mechanically, and their outcome not subject to appeal. That implies that cases that are not cut and dry or otherwise manifestly obvious are a poor fit for being addressed in the design of the LGR. That goes for block banning as well. And the discussion of block banning is because, I'm sorry, we can use block variance as a mechanism to mitigate security risk measures, right?
I think this is an important message.
Yes. Yes, and he later goes, talks about the turn E and double and the schwa, and specific in that context, their relation is that of exact homoglyphs. That's two more paragraphs, yeah. So such cases clearly should not be subject to appeal, and therefore the use of block variance in the LGR would be appropriate on that reason as well. That method we got in Puerto Rico, I think. In contrast, cases where letters are, in fact, distinguishable, there enters some subjectivity in the analysis, the more the less the degree of actual similarity in a given case. The more subjective a decision becomes, the less it is appropriate to enshrine it in the LGR, and the more it naturally becomes a matter for appeal. That is the reason why visual similarity is normally out of scope of the rules on LGR. And when they talk about the appeal, it came to my mind, because this is something that we, in the rules on LGR working group, we are analyzing, is that you want the rules on LGR is the IDN table for the root zone. And it's supposed to be, it's an algorithm to establish whether a label is valid or not valid. And that calculation and determination should be not subject to appeal, should be finite, not provisional. So how do you accomplish that? Right, on the one hand, going all the way to objective, very objective and clear-cut cases, like exactly homologous, right? There is no, right? They are equal, they are the same, so you cannot say these are not the same. But when you go from there into confusability, visual similarity, then you will end up with variance or log variance where it depends on who's looking at it, right? It's subjective. And then you end up with a tool that is supposed to be a final determination whether a label is valid or not invalid and what the calculated variance are. You don't want TLD applicants being challenging the results of this LGR. That's why roots on LGR is just one step in the whole application process, right? So roots on LGR was meant to deal with cut and dry cases, and then you have visual similarity review panel, right? It's a panel made of experts into looking at these confusability similarity issues that ICANN contracts and take a look at these cases, and they do into deep analysis and even done in a step process requiring research, study, focus group, et cetera, et cetera. And then they deal with those. And then you start with a roots on LGR and say it's 1 and 0. That's it.
Technically, it's a 1 and 0. Actually, it's not a 1 and 0. We're taking something which is continuous and trying to divide it into 1s and 0s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. And it's mostly an issue of security and stability. I think the passage you quoted before about the cut and dry thingy, it's more about the application, and I have no doubt about that. Once the LGR is set, it's applied as it is. You want a different LGR? Go develop a second version of it. But the outcome of it is not to be challenged. But it is not to be challenged because it's a binary encoding of an arbitration which we did here amongst us. However, if you look at the text, you see that it's yellow highlighted because, for example, on specifically these paragraphs, I left a comment. What I said is about this, the more, the less the degree of actual similarity in a given case. And I commented, there is no clear single criteria of actual similarity. Using the terminology, using the phrasing actual similarity suggests absolute identity, which in reality does not exist. So I think IP is making things which are more complex simple. If that's the way they want to go on about it, it's their choice. I don't think this is a very clear statement when it comes to these cognitive and psycholinguistic issues, which may or may not have impact on what we're discussing.
So I think just to add to that, I think they're talking about the general spirit and general principle level discussion, just to sort of set the stage on what, you know, how the GP maybe should address this rather than actually give a formula which should be applied. And I think in spirit, I think that's what I'd be saying. This is how we should proceed. And obviously the interpretation and exact mapping of it on data is left to the generation panel.
And this is what they also said in different places. There was one part where they said explicitly, the decision is up to Latin GP. So they stressed that it's ours to make a choice, not theirs to make a choice.
Exactly. But yes, the guiding principle is what they are suggesting.
But also with that comes with the evidence, right? We need to provide the evidence such that we can defend the case. And
true.
And later we will see, because they're responding to our proposed variants, there are several of those that the IP recommended to remove.
Yes. So,
so
what I mean is like...
So how do we now go back to the... You know, so go back to the reading.
I just wanted to give an example of what I meant and what the difference. So Manson was given this example. And he says they used identically by some speakers or writers of Swedish. So this is kind of like a semantic identity.
Yeah.
People see them, people see the shades, they understand they're different shades, but they consider them conceptually to be one. Okay? You also have things where things are not semantically different, but visually. So for example, you have the Karon and you have the Hache. So, and this is where it comes to basically, you can call it laziness, you can call it whatever you want, but the point is, in a lot of handwriting, and these things will effectively become the same, because people don't take the time to make a real difference. And because people are reading and writing always based on handwriting, these things are in their minds, often in an unaware form. So they see these things, and they may think, oh, it's actually the same.
But
so I'm saying, in
Gilbert, if you remember, we call them vagrants. If you remember, Alif with Hamza and Alif without Hamza, those and Alif with Amada, those were quote-unquote laziness things
laziness,
which were eventually mapped onto variants, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So in Arabic script, we had such cases where we actually made them variants. So we have visual similarity, as you would call it, in the terminology you have chosen.
So that those variants are encoded in the LGR,
yes,
and cannot be challenged.
Yes.
So if we can have that in the Arabic LGR, we could have it in the Latin LGR.
But those
too.
Were technically not the visual variants. We actually had a separate principle to encode those variants.
I don't understand.
As something like a cognitive processing rather than a... So it was more semantic rather than visual. Because visually you can tell them apart. There's no problem.
Right.
But people would consider them the same because...
Yeah, but it's the same thing as in Swedish. They are considered the same.
So the correct form is two dots. A lot of speakers, because of laziness, on this shape, they just put a stroke.
Yeah.
Because the same you have a form with three dots, and they just do something like this, for example.
Right, but that,
so these processes are kind of inherent in most scripts. There is always difference in like the canonical shape of a glyph, the canonical representation of whatever letter is, linguistic terms, the grapheme, as well as what people actually do. And people start to think about what they actually do. And they start to think about what they actually do at a very early age. About the time, I would say, when you stop being focused on learning writing and learning handwriting and more being concerned with learning meaning. So like in some, like, I don't know about you guys, but like when I was in school, we had these school books with three different layers and like, okay, so the L goes from here to here and like the A, it starts like here, and it must stay down here. So there are rules about canonical shapes of letters, and I think they're taught across all script-using communities. But once you start being concerned more with what is actually being said and how it is being spelled, how it's being written, people start becoming lazy and mix those up.
Right. So,
and those occur across the script-using communities.
Right, but I think...
unlike those. That's what I was trying to say.
It's important.
What do you mean, unlike those?
These are limited to Swedish, probably.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know about German that uses the erasers.
Maybe these may not be limited to one language, but to several languages.
Right. So I think what we're talking about as simplification in Arabic script was more broader than just Arabic language, for example. It was general behavior found in all Arabic script fusion languages. But in any case, I think it's important that we distinguish these cases.
Yeah.
We are not. We shouldn't lump these cases into. So to me, these are three different cases. This is more about co-articulation or co-writing, I guess, phenomenon versus you know, this is not actually about articulating it together. It's about actually simplifying things. It's actually a different phenomenon where you have a simple alif versus alif with a hamza.
The Swedish case is a mixture of simplification and different styles.
It's actually more like, I would say it's more like in speech what we have co-articulation, right? Where you are saying two things together, but since you want to say it very quickly, you'll just mix them and merge them. You know, instead of writing three dots, you just make it a stroke.
Yeah, you can look at it like that.
But simplifying is, you know, there are two kinds of simplifying, simplification going on here. There is one which is saying that, you know, I can't be bothered to write, lift the pen too many times, so I'm just going to write it like that. It represents three dots, one dot, two dot, and three dot. That's inherently what it represents to me. Versus this is normally written like this, alif with hamza, I just write it like that. I just totally eat that hamza up. There's no co-articulation going on, simply.
Yes.
I don't see really the distinction between co-articulation and
representation. Whereas here you're not doing an alternate representation.
One is about ergonomics and efficiency of basically hand movement. The other one,
so in
the other one is about
just heating this up. You're not really writing this. You're not. There's no alternate representation. I guess you can say you're replacing it with a null.
Right.
Where here you're actually not replacing it with a null. You're actually replacing it with something. But this is not in typed form in any case. So in Arabic script, this was not an issue because it doesn't really exist in a typed form. It's only
the
written.
This one.
Yes.
But the point being that the same process is not limited to Arabic script, but it probably applies to most scripts, because most scripts are learned in handwriting, and then you start understanding, oh, okay, there's like a canonical shape, and it has that many variations, and all of that are kind of the same.
Right.
And you start building context in your mind where you say, okay, so in this context, A and B are the same, but in that context, A and B are different. And in the end, this comes down to two orthographies.
But
where
so
we
I,
say
I really
alpha and A are different letters, where in other forms, they may, where in other contexts, they may actually be the same.
Right.
I want to challenge you when it comes to starting with handwriting, because children start to be exposed to written language first, and then they start to produce handwriting. So they read before they write, and when they read, typed language, not handwritten language.
I agree that they're exposed to written language before they are exposed to handwritten language, probably because it's all around. But the cognitive process of associating written speech with spoken speech, I think, it really takes off when they start doing writing and reading together. But I don't have references on my hand right now, and I don't think it's all that relevant to our discussion, because even those who first start learning to read a few letters because they see it somewhere and because their parents, like, encourage them to do it, they will still undergo like a systematic routine of learning how to read and to write at some level of school, because all systems of schooling across the world, they all have a primary level where you start dealing with reading and writing.
So let me actually make another point, and that is that when what we are reading right now, IP is only suggested in the context of visual variants. What we are talking
what
here
kind
on
of
the board is not visual variants. They are actually, to me, they're more cognitive or semantic variation.
Can you make that distinction? I don't understand it.
So
which one
visual variants to me are two things which are exactly alike, which are you can't tell, you know, glyph wise they are the same.
Yeah.
Or almost the same, I guess, whatever the criteria is. But they represent two different code points in Unicode.
Yes.
Like versus this kind of variation we are talking about is more of a cognitive variation.
Yes.
Because clearly, I can, as a native speaker of the language, I can tell the difference.
Yes,
I know the difference. But I still think they are the same, or I still want them.
You consider them.
Consider them to be the same. So it's not really a visual variation; it's actually a semantic variation. And I think we should keep those discussions apart.
But there is no hard distinction between the two, because you can make small variations.
So
where it's hard to see the difference, but they are. I'm
contending is that these two things everybody can tell the difference, but they still map it to each other because they semantically consider them to be equivalent. Not that because visually they can't.
But if you have the other examples beside each other, so if there are dots or small vertical spokes.
Okay, so this may actually be a visual case, but this is not a visual case. That's what I'm saying. This is a semantic case.
Yes.
So we need to be clear that you know, we distinguish the visual cases from semantic cases.
Yes.
I don't think the term semantic is,
okay, that's what
choose.
Does everyone understand the terminology?
You know, what I'm saying is a non visual case. You know, let's do visual and non visual, I guess, if that makes sense. That equivalency which you are saying between these two, nobody is going to visually confuse them. They're confusing it at a different level.
Yeah.
Right. I agree with you that
they confuse the meaning.
They're considered to be the same.
Right.
Just and as capital letter and a small letter,
right.
they are considered to be the same, and therefore people don't pay attention to the difference, and they're considered, I mean, they could mix them up.
Right. So I guess when we are looking at the explanation which IP is providing, IP is actually talking about visual cases only in this context. It's not really talking about semantic cases. And so if we differentiate that or non-visual cases, if we take those out and only focus on visual cases and similarity of visual cases to that extent that they can only, we're going to call the variants, I think that's where they're saying that, you know, we really want to focus on those cases which are cut and dry rather than things which sort of go beyond a certain level.
When it comes to the, what you call the
visual variants. That's what I'm saying. I think we need to differentiate our discussion across those two things and not mix them when we are reading IP business.
Just to be clear, so you're saying IP is referring to which out of these
the visual
three
cases.
Different types?
Visual cases. These comments are mostly on visual cases,
and
because non-visual cases are obviously going to be different visually, even if they're considered variants.
Visual case is this. Visual case is this.
The one above could be visual, but this is clearly not visual, because the native speakers can clearly read and distinguish between. So
they are not referring to this.
This I would not consider that
they
to be a visual.
They may or may not be referring to this.
They could be. No, that could be a visual. Because that's not a. That's a visual distinction and small. That distinction is lost in small fonts, right? Or small sizes, possibly. But the tilde and the rhesus is certainly not a.
I can see the principal distinction between the cases, but I think it's hard to in practice to consider them to be different.
Right.
So because if you would have a test, I think that native speakers wouldn't see the difference.
No, but that's fine. I think As analysts, we should be able to categorize them, even if the visual, if the so for example, when we talk about languages in general, people who, you know, we all speak English, but we may not be familiar with the grammar rules or the sounds which exist to make English and all that, you know, but when you do an analysis as a linguist, obviously you go into those details and you categorize things and subcategorize things and so on. So what I'm saying is that, you know, sure, two things can be the same, quote unquote, which is what we call variance, mm-hmm. by native speakers, but when we are doing the analysis, I think it's good to subcategorize those things which are same into distinct boxes. And again, going back to what we did for Arabic script, we actually had multiple categories, you know, of why two things should be the same. Some of them were visual identity, of course, but there were many categories which were not visual identity, based on visual identity. There was spelling simplification case. There was a calligraphic variation case, the two calves, the swash calf and the regular calf, and so on. So we actually subcategorized it into many different phenomena. And each variant was labeled based on the phenomenon rather than just because they are quote-unquote considered same by a community. So I guess what I'm saying is that whatever you guys are doing, you need to subcategorize it in different buckets. And it's good to have those buckets for clarity, I guess, and not mix them.
So the buckets that we establish for inscript variants, right, which is the case that we are discussing right now, it's two buckets, right? The one that addresses visual identity, so homoglyphs, and the second bucket, interchangeability, which is, I think, it's categories are...
And those, the interchangeability would maybe go into subcategories.
Yeah,
as well.
Probably but, more than one bucket.
But one thing to note is that the IP suggested that for cross-script variants, we should limit ourselves to the visual part and not go beyond, I think. And for within script, obviously, it's up to the GP to really decide what the subcategories are.
I think we probably need to go beyond just homoglyphs, because like the Brev and the Charon aren't homoglyphs, but in 12-point font, you can't tell which one it is.
Sure. So, you can
so they're not homoglyphs. They're not pixel identical, but they're visually indistinguishable.
Maybe that's a category itself, right?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. That let's categorize these and then let's see how to.
I have a terminological problem.
Right.
The terminological problem is suggested by the binary approach. But the reality is continuous, and we can just try to pinpoint different areas of that continuous relationship, and I don't know.
I wonder
whatever we want, but it's not all the same thing.
I wonder if we would be better off going through the various code points and discussing, is this
the same category or a different?
Well, is this something that would be a variant, and then figure out the categories after we said, all right, these are problematic, and then go back and say, okay, these fall, you know, here's a clump, that's one category, here's a clump, that's...
Yeah.
That's exactly what we have done in the case of Arabic script, for example. So far, we have been discussing mainly what is called exact homoglyphs, so schwa versus the turned E, right?
Yeah.
Which is a clear-cut case. And now we've been talking cases where single languages consider things to be equivalent, but this is what we have termed semantic equivalence. We can use another, like, they consider them to have the same meaning, although they have a different shape, if you want to go away from semantics and those terminologies we've been using, which are a bit more linguistic. But there are things in between those two extremes, and in between those edges. And for example, we could go through the diacritics and look at them and say, are they confusable or are they not confusable? And by that, and then by proxy, we can also say, okay, which of these occur in our repertoire, and where do we need to take a second look? I think it will come up in the case of in-script variants.
But again, going back, what IP is saying here is limited to only visual variants. They're not really making a statement on non-visual variants, which can be visually very different, actually, and still be considered the same.
Yeah.
Non-visual as in semantic, as in the...
Alif Hamza and Alif, for example.
But I think the visual variants go beyond.
So they're saying as far as visual variant analysis is concerned, they're asking to be just focus it on things which are really almost the same.
Right. Clear cut.
Right. And not go beyond. And if you want to go beyond, I think there should be some other motivation, cognitive or which should justify that. And it should be generally applicable across multiple languages, not just a single language, I guess.
I'm not sure if I understand. Okay, once more. For example, difference between Karan and Hatchek. Is that what you would term visual difference and what you think they are suggesting to exclude?
At a very small font size, maybe they are the same. So that this is more of a visual confusability rather than cognitive confusability. Whereas the tilde and diresis is clearly not a, you know, visually you can tell them apart. It's not really a problem.
Yeah. It's, I would say those two should be automatically, you know, I think that's clear cut enough. You never want to have something that only differs by that because nobody can tell. I mean, if you had it centimeter high, underlying letters, sure, you could tell, but you know, people use 12-point fonts, and you can't tell it that way.
So that's a decision I'm saying which we should actually make, but that would be an example of a visual case, the 12-point font, versus the diresis and tilde, which would be a case of not a visual variant case.
So I'm not sure about the terminology here again. I'm not sure if I understand the way you use the words. To put simply, because the case of the Karan versus the Hatchek is where you said it's something which probably they have been speaking about and they have ruled out somehow.
No.
This is what I understood from what you were saying.
No.
Then I misunderstood you because they're mentioning that case specifically in the letter.
I didn't say that. I'm saying this is clearly a non-visual identity case in case this is taken up. And this, for example, at small font sizes, the motivation is, if it's considered as a variant, the motivation is that it looks visually the same. So this is certainly a visual argument, and this is a non-visual argument.
Yes, correct. And
I'm not saying it should be either this way or that way. That's something for you guys to decide. But the motivation for the above is visual, and for the below is not too visual.
But you said that IP was speaking only about one of them.
The one. It's talking about when it's talking here. I think it's talking about only the visual variants, not the semantic variants. And it's saying the visual variants really need to be visually very close to each other.
The comments that they raised to us, they are referring to the visual similarity.
So
I'm not talking about cognitive similarity.
So I do think they only speak about some things. They don't speak about all things.
No, they
all
don't.
The,
exactly.
I do agree with that. I still have gotten confused now. More with what you were explaining than before, because what you were saying with visual similarity, the Karan versus Hatchek is one of the specific examples they give in a letter where they said it's something which we can consider.
I'm not sure whether they say that, but
this.
Where do they say that?
Going further, there are some pairs of diacritics that, while nominally different, are harder to tell apart and commonly not used in the same language, like a breath and a caron, or comma below and cedilla below.
So they actually think they are confusable, right?
In some cases, not all fonts will show the nominal shape.
Where are you?
Yes, where are you?
Under the heading Security, Mitigation and Variance. It's the
right, but which paragraph?
For five, the fifth paragraph of that. I left a comment on that, so it should be highlighted yellow.
Okay, this one? Yeah?
Yeah, I'm gonna. Yes, sir. Yeah, exactly.
No.
Sorry. That was German.
So I thought this means that this is something which is possible.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's possible with the right evidence, right?
Right.
Exactly.
So then IP is not disagreeing with that.
Exactly.
So that's what I was also saying.
Okay, then I understood you wrong. That's what I'm trying to say.
I was saying that this is a candidate for visual variance, and this is not, to me, a candidate for visual variance.
I agree with that. I understood from what you were saying that the top example was ruled out.
But so the key thing, though, it's the evidence, right? It's not us recording the conversation, but it's finding the evidence so that IP can read that information.
We can't present anything without evidence.
Yeah.
We have to have a discussion about it. We have to speak about cognitive and psycholinguistic processes and the different buckets, as Sarmat called it, and we have to make a distinction between these things. But
so what is a cognitive?
The Dariches and the Tiller.
Cognitive.
That's not visual.
No, I agree with you, but I don't understand the cognitive.
Well, let's call it non-visual.
We can call it, okay.
So, we can come up with a word which actually I think is more representative of what this difference is, but I think the general bucket is the non-visual for that.
Yeah.
Well, in case you may want to make it up.
So one bucket is something is visually the same.
Yes.
Another bucket is something is visually similar because the differences are sometimes or often left out. Another one is something is semantically similar. And another bucket is
semantically similar.
So I would probably
semantically the same.
Making it flat.
They are different, but they have the same meaning.
They have no meaning.
So I
would
but
suggest
they
to
used
sort of do a
present the same thing.
Visual and non-visual, and this is something which is very close. And I think what we did was what you guys did was make a 4-point scale and said the first 2 points are going to be considered visual, and the others are not going to be considered visual. So you already done that analysis. And here you have obviously multiple cases in which you said one thing is left out. So the optionality, obviously this may not be applicable to Latin. We did this in Arabic. Equivalent, we are talking about the diocese and the Tilda case. Somehow they consider the same.
Well,
this is a non-visual case.
In French speaking, writing, you, as far as I know, you can leave the diacritics out if you're writing in capital letters.
Yes.
Well, capital letters are out of scope.
Well,
case is very out of scope. That's very, I think IP is very clear on that. So let's keep that discussion out, I guess. So
in English, between I and I with diaresis.
Yeah. So that would be this case, right?
You say optional.
Okay. Well, it's this because it's got one dot versus two dots.
Yeah, but it's optional as in the diacritic. The diuresis is optional.
But okay, but initially,
it's actually two different diacritics.
So what is the optional then?
As I said, this is an Arabic example. It may not have to be.
But isn't that as much on the right side as, I mean, What's optional with that is different shapes.
The architect is optional.
The different shapes of the letters.
No, it's the same letters.
Yeah, but you have the one dot, the two dots, or you have no something above and something above. Isn't that the same thing?
So it would be this case if there was a single dot by itself, but in English, a single dot doesn't exist.
Right, you can't add
another single dot. It's either one dot or two dots.
Italian has such cases. Left-hand side. They have...
Do you have an example?
Yeah. Actually, I'm trying to remember.
I mean, you have the whole shape of the letter.
Ooh.
So I think that the distinction between optional and I don't can't read the what you've written on the right side. I don't think that you can make that distinction.
I had some of these examples in the earlier text I had written like months ago.
The proposal of optionality if they are considering.
What kind of optionality? I mean, you have two different shapes.
Exactly.
One shape, another shape. One shape, another shape. One shape, another shape. So I don't think that these are two different categories.
Sure, I understand.
Okay.
It may be the way the Arabic and Latin are like two different writing systems, which actually Arabic has inherently optional diacritics, which Latin obviously doesn't. It's just a system of alphabetic writing systems versus abjad writing systems. It could actually be that I'm actually reading it from a native Arabic speaker's
and
Arabic writing systems context.
It's in the script. It's at the script level. The other thing is at the language level. There's a difference there.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is that we really need to categorize it like this, and then know which category each case is fitting.
But we do have such examples. For example.
But okay, but I think that someone has made a point that we have the visual, which is not dependent on any specific language or use, and we have the non-visual, which is dependent on language and use.
This is dependent on language.
Yeah.
This can or cannot be dependent on language.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this can be specific to languages, for example, in the case of K versus A, where it is an Italian case, but it can also be independent of language. And this is where I think we're talking about Hatchinger's current.
What I would probably say is that is this. We had 2 4-point scales. This is the example, perhaps, of the turned in.
Yeah,
the Hatchet and Caron case falls either here or here. That's something you guys need to decide. But that's a visual case. That's not really that.
Can be both. Can be either visual or it can be optionality. It depends on how people who learn to read and to write actually learn it. If you're an English user and you don't know either, for you it's a visual similarity. Because you cannot tell the difference if it's too small and you're not adjusted, you're not trained to distinguish those differences. But if you're a user of an orthography which uses, for example, one of the two, and you learn, okay, this is correct, but then everybody is lazy and writes it this way, then it becomes an optional thing. So this can be either visual or it can be non-visual, depending on which part of the script community you come from.
Okay.
This is what I think. And we have a lot of such cases which are localized to single languages. And since they are parallel, so what I'm saying is, if Italian makes a difference, if Italian is not careful to distinguish between A and A with this modifier, if we find other languages where we have A versus A with a non-modifier, then that may be a candidate for something where people are not careful to make a distinction. And then it's non-visual. It's more laziness of the reader and writer rather than they can't see the difference.
Yeah, so the right side needs to be generally a bit more universal than language dependent for it to be a good candidate.
Yes, I agree. If you have several languages, if you have several writing communities where people are too lazy to write, I don't know,
the thing really round and make it double. You know, and just put it there. Then that's the case for something which is crusted.
So where will you find that evidence?
I think you look at, first of all, how people register, well, in the case of technical stuff, how people register the mains. And then, like, you look at how people spell things. You can find the evidence.
Let me search for it.
Yeah, so one example of such category would be the two shapes of letter A, right?
The term E and the shua?
No.
No.
That we normally, you know, type form is like that, but we normally don't
A.
Write it like that.
Yeah,
I have a lovely example of that because I've got a logo that came on an email from Bank of America, and the A in bank is the one that looks like an alpha, and the A at the end of America is the other one. And there,
we don't have an alpha.
No, but that's...
Sorry?
This one, the alpha versus A, they're called a unicorn.
Yeah.
We go in this bucket.
They are equivalent, right?
They are
because
equivalent,
visually, it's not
visually.
Really a visual issue, right?
Exactly.
This is the normative
yes.
issue.
This
right.
is the
yes.
people that think they are the same, although they can
but
see they don't look the same.
You can't
use interchangeably.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
think
yeah.
they are the same,
right?
although they can see they don't look the same.
No, I
different.
Agree.
They're not different graphemes.
In most,
sorry, different glyphs.
In most languages, they're the same grapheme.
Yeah, but the glyphs are the same.
Yes, they're the same grapheme, exactly. Linguistically, it would be graph versus grapheme distinction. My point is, this, for example, is a candidate for something in the equivalent bucket,
yeah.
which is cross-grip.
Yeah. But we should not do this in the visual form. You know,
no.
Clearly not visual.
No.
Not visual.
Right. Right.
But there are more of such cases.
Yes, there's a risk of confusion, but not because they're visually...
Exactly. And
visually, it's towards...
right. So, again, the comments which IP is providing are only for the visual cases. They're not for the non-visual cases. For those, obviously, I think these comments don't apply.
Yes.
Okay.
Are there other examples like the A and the alpha?
Yeah.
Yes.
The one we looked at, the F and the F with the T.
Oh, well,
yes.
For Swedish. There are two letters, right?
Yeah.
For example.
Capture. 192.
F
and the F with a hook.
Yes.
Well, not Swedish. I think across the board.
Across the board.
Yeah.
I think also.
Yeah, well, I documented it for Swedish.
And the tilde and the turny and the schwa.
The turny and the
schwa. Yeah, the turny and schwa is a
well,
different.
That's a homophobic
system, sorry. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, this is
also
something this is, which is, I guess, we'll have to discuss. Because I think IP points out that you know, we need to be careful on.
Cross-grip
variants and what kind of implications this is having.
I'm saying it's a candidate.
Yes.
I'm not saying it's definitely one which we should consider a variant. But I'm saying there are a lot of people who learn these things and they consider one the canonical shape and the other one. Like, this is what you type, and this is what you write by hand, maybe. And so in your mind, you can see that they're different, but you understand them to be the same, to mean the same. And there are other cases.
So this one, right, you're talking about?
I'm talking about 028B. Yeah, exactly, and the regular B. And there are other ones. Let's see. Another one is the small capital I, 026A.
This one.
Yes, versus the regular I. Then I would also say 0269, Latin small letter iota. 269.
Okay, this one.
Yes, versus regular L.
Oh, there's a difference in size, though.
They do have a difference in size,
yeah.
But this is,
this is one of the cases which can be
either non-visual or visual. If there's a size difference, it's a visual thing. You can't tell them apart.
Good, actually. L and I are, I think, Latin speakers are very well trained to make that kind of distinction.
In size?
In size. In I and L.
Yes, but...
Because you know, you yourself said you're trained on those four lines.
Yeah, sure.
The I is between the last two lines and the... And so, you know, it's part of your Latin training that that size actually you're very well trained.
For example, I and L,
like there is something like...
if you have an L...
shape of an L, which has something like a baseline thingy, I think that thing is optional. And when you look at handwriting, usually you use cursive, so you connect it and you just do something like this. But there are a lot of people who would just do a stroke.
Or like a loop.
No, but it's a length. The height of it actually makes a difference.
Yeah, the height makes a difference.
Height on
going up,
but you can have it lower. It can go below the line.
The height makes a difference.
It can go below the line.
In comparison to other letters.
Right. So what I'm saying is that Latin readers would very easily be able to distinguish the height. It's ingrained in the training of learning the Latin.
Yes. It's one of the basic properties.
Yeah.
If there is a difference, yes. The question is if there is a difference.
Right.
That depends on the font. So
fonts are very regular in their height, actually. It would make a difference.
On the other hand, you have a security issue because within the font, the height is different as long as you're using the same font size.
Why?
That's something you would need to sort of see how far you want to take that analysis. So
yeah, I understand.
Can you mix fonts in a label?
As a security issue, it's more a matter. pardon me. It's more a matter of can a malicious bad actor take something and tweak the font size of one letter so as to make something that's a problem.
Yeah, but then you can also mix different fonts, not only the sizes, right, and so on. So that sort of expands it into a space where I think anything is possible.
Definitely. Fair enough.
So, you know, I guess limiting it to same font size, same font would probably be a reasonable assumption to take, I guess.
Okay.
So shall we come back to this? Comments?
And nothing is clear to me now after all this discussion. Shall we take a break?
What time is it?
3:00? 3:00.
It's 3:00?
We started. I think it's, what time do we have the break? We started 15 minutes later.
So, you want to close this document, or how would you want
to? No, I think we need to go through the whole document, right?
Right.
And extract the guidance that we sought for.
Because after this discussion, I don't see any clear conclusion.
No, I think
I cannot.
We have the forks, right? So I think we are in the right direction. Right now we have two prongs in the fork, right? The visual, non-visual. Right now the non-visual is called interchangeability, for lack of a better term, I guess. And what we're talking about is that fork needs to be farther expanded, if you will, have more branches, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And then we have to define how do we are going to define those non-visual branches.
I must say that after all this discussion, all of my brain is working on the top of the power after the lunch. I don't see, shall we focus only on visual similarity and leave this second branch completely out?
No. What we're saying is we have this. We are at this point, right?
Yeah.
We have, and this is all in script variants, right?
Yeah.
Variants within the Latin script. So we define two categories, or as explained in the document, two dimensions, right? The visual one and the non-visual one.
Okay.
The non-visual one. The visual one is called visual dimension, and the other one is called, I think, interchangeability dimension or something else. I can't remember the name. So we are here. You all remember the four-point scale,
yeah.
Right? Almost nearly identical, font difference, distinguishable, and different.
Yeah.
And we use a five in the worksheet, but that's irrelevant here. And we established that all the candidates were going to be with one. Now we're talking about maybe we need to include them as twos, right, with a very narrow criteria, apparently guidance. So we're talking about visual identity.
Sorry, a question. I thought we were already doing one and two as visual variants.
One and two in the cross script.
In the cross script.
Oh, in the cross script.
In the
script,
we haven't done. That, yeah.
The IP for all that during the call. But not right now, as they put it, they have a refining thinking and kind of considering that nearly homogeneous may be the case if properly
evident.
On this one, there may be a different cases, so we need to discuss in order to provide the evidence, and we need to further expand this non-visual leg, if you will, and have different branches. One could be this equivalence for handwriting conventions, just picking up one name.
Yeah. So I would actually, for example, divide equivalence in two subcategories. Equivalence in, no, equivalence, the lower one.
Uh-huh.
One is equivalence in diacritic, and the other one is equivalence in base form.
Yes.
So these are examples of equivalence in base form. Those are examples of diacritic. So those are two subcategories of equivalence, for example.
Yeah.
I propose that we focus on the visual first, and then we take the non-visual. So we discuss what criteria, et cetera, for the visual and finalize that discussion. And then we move over to the non-visual.
Okay.
Yeah. I think at a high level, we know we have to do this work. And we need to expand it. And we have two categories right here. Let's focus on this one. That's
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
So then if we do that, we have kind of finalized something. We have something complete.
Mm-hmm.
And since IP mostly talk about that, or only, then it's better to focus on that.
So.
And Mariana want to focus on the coffee.
I don't want to focus on that. Although I have a mess in my head about those things. Maybe at the end I will understand something.
Maybe the caffeine will help.
No, the caffeine won't help because I have this problem last 3 years. So it is not solved yet.
Okay, so
my brain cannot understand it.
Mess and message?
No, mess. In this moment it is a mess.
Okay.
All right, so now there's a...
people agree with it,
urgency to have a break, so I suggest it. Let's finish up with the out of scope, which is short section,
okay.
So we know what we should not be talking about, and then we can go back and address and start looking at the at the valiant candidates. And also, there's a question. We still have the cross kit variants we propose and we have feedback on, so we need to decide whether we want to jump into the Latin script variants or do we finish out the cross script first.
First, yeah.
Right, so there are
things that we
need to define.
The both things.
Okay, so out of scope. There you are. You're already there. Okay, so from the top, some example can be considered out of scope for one reason. I think the examples is referring to the ones that we provided in the document. Generally, the IP is not considering uppercase presentation of IDNs, which are inherently lowercase. I think talks to the bullet number 3 of the cases that we submitted. Goes on, more importantly, because of the way upper and lower case shapes are related across scripts, it is not feasible to create binding relations. For example, symmetry and transitivity would force a binding relation between Latin N and P if the upper cases from Greek A and U was considered. Speaking of balance between last basic Latin letters, I think it refers to case of the one we submitted, and RN.
Yeah, RN versus N.
These are completely out of scope because they do not apply to non-IDN TLDs. For cross-script variants, any proposed variant that via symmetry and transitivity would impose an in-script variant relation in any non-Latin script would face a very high bar. I think there are cases already proposed within Greek. Greek and Cyrillic, because we didn't put any Armenian. Greek and Cyrillic that via these properties establish binding relationships in a script for those scripts, and that's a no-no for IP. And that's a case that we already have for Armenian. So
yeah,
that
we should. Because you cannot force people using one script that we dictate them what is their in-script variant. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We cannot make agreement ever.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And lastly, for the root song, any relations that involve coupons not in MSR3 are also not considered, which now we know, right? Unless it is intended to apply for these coupons to be addressed MSR4. I think that goes to the number two against the Armenian.
Yeah, we had in
Armenian. Because I don't think we proposed any out of MSR. That's four. Number two, digit two, the shape that
right.
looks like a two.
Yes.
Two is not in NSR.
Right.
Well, the first sentence already. Some examples can be considered out of scope for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they're trying to say. A bit vague, a bit unspecific, but it's their style. So, I think the section out of scope is clear.
Yes.
Okay. It rules out some of the cases we were discussing before. So, no variant relationship by proxy because an uppercase form looks like a lowercase form or vice versa across scripts. However, I find that the way they argue for it is markedly different from the discussions where we were having, because they point out that the difference between upper and lower script or uppercase and lowercase is not stable across related scripts. And this is the example they're giving here, right, with the new. So they're saying,
no,
you know, if you make a round trip, they're saying that if you go there, then you'll have to make N and V variants of each other.
Yes. So there is no symmetry between the scripts and the way they relate lowercase to uppercase, which creates further issues.
Oh.
So I'm saying it's another argument to stop it.
Yeah.
It was not one we were having before. It's an additional argument to stop us from doing that because it becomes more complicated.
Correct.
And I think the same with the argument after that. They're saying if we impose variants on ASCII characters, we would have things which are not allowed in TLDs but would be allowed in TLDs.
Yeah.
So this is also another argument to the ones we were having before. Before we were like, I don't think we can have variants in ASCII without a specific reason for it. So I think we should put these in the proposal and say, there is this kind of thing, we are not following this route because blah.
Well, so I think another thing which they have not really mentioned, but it is actually very clear, is that if you start bringing variants within ASCII, for example, if you go the uppercase route, you then will make current TLD delegations, country codes, variants of each other.
But
that brings instability to the root zone.
This is what I understand they're saying here.
Sorry?
The second paragraph, I understood that they meant exactly that. What you say just now. You cannot have different variants in TLDs and IDN TLDs.
No, no. Second paragraph is basically saying that, like, you would not want other script communities to impose within Latin variants.
Sorry, my counting was rough.
You don't want to create a variant set which will impose variants in other scripts either.
Sorry, my counting was rough. These are, speaking of variants between basic Latin letters, these are completely out of scope because they do not apply to non-IDN TLDs. This argument, they do not apply to non-IDN TLDs. It's a new argument which we hadn't discussed in our discussions before. And I think we should add it to the proposal as an argument against it. And I think they're right.
You mean in our principles somewhere?
Well, if we eventually we must have a section discussing variants, and we will discuss,
yeah.
Okay,
oh,
we encountered, we considered this and this type, we decided to include this type, we decided not to include this type, so we will have a methodological discussion about the way we go about variants, and that will be much more elaborate than what we already have, because our principles were too shallow, so to say.
Mm.
So this is one thing where we can say, okay, there also exists this, but we are not going to do this because of this.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that they lift up some good argument against certain variants, but I think that the statement that about uppercase, the general statement, is quite weak.
What do you mean?
The general, the IP is not considering uppercase presentation of IDNs, which are inherently lowercase. Because the way that the domain names are used is not lowercase.
That argument is weak, but the other argument following that is strong.
Yes,
Latin N and V, the uppercase form Greek new would be considered.
That's what I said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I was also trying to say.
I think that first argument they have
is
weak.
Exactly. The second one is much stronger.
There are problems of having variants based on uppercase, but it's not because. But you cannot reject a variant based on uppercase because IDN should be inherently lowercase, because that is only true in that mechanical
and conception, not an actual user interface level.
Right.
All the implementations
have,
at user level.
Right. We have to realize that all confusion between code points are in the minds of the user. It's not in the system.
Yes.
The system has no problem distinguishing different code points.
Yeah.
Schwa and turned E, that's perfectly distinguishable, because they're different code points, but not in the minds of the user.
Yes.
So, I think that we shouldn't fall into just accepting their uppercase view.
Because that's what we asked for.
Yeah, but we shouldn't just swallow it. We have to accept that, okay, we cannot go further, but we shouldn't say that this is what we think, that just ignoring the confusion between uppercase is just nothing to consider. Because it is something to consider, but it doesn't mean that it results in variance.
So there are two arguments here, right, on the table. And you're saying the first is weak, the second is strong?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess we have consensus on this. Facile.
Right, what?
And the third one is also a good argument.
Which is the third?
The ignorance between basic Latin letters.
Ah, yes, but it's on another discussion.
Yes.
That's another topic.
Yes.
Yes, they're all good arguments, except for the we don't consider uppercase because we don't consider uppercase.
Mm.
That's like, what's the term for it? Like when you make reference to your
software reference.
Yeah, that's a lot. Okay.
So how are we concluding this then?
Well, if there's so much to conclude right here. I mean, this is...
Are we agreeing to this?
I think we're agreeing to the out-of-scope part.
That's what I'm asking.
To the out-of-scope part.
Three items in the out-of-scope.
Exactly, and there are probably three items. And the stuff before, there are very complex conclusions out of that, and we should discuss them maybe in the next session. Now take a break and give everyone
a break. Agree to the
three items
in
the out-of-scope.
Well, actually, the... Four items, but
Yeah.
I don't agree with the first one. Well, I agree that they don't consider it, but I don't. Yes, I agree with that. I agree that they don't consider it. So
I've minuted that as a comment.
Yeah. So yeah, there are actually four items. So before we go to break, how shall we continue? So we have on the table the comments from our Latin Cyrillic, Latin Greek proposals. We can go over those, or do we jump into discovering Latin script variants?
I think it's better to conclude things so that we have something that we have. I mean, this is done, or at least is almost done, and then continue with the next.
And maybe tomorrow we shall have some more ideas about all this, to confuse me more.
My sense, reading the other document they sent us on variants, is that for cross-script variants, they had a somewhat broader net than we had cast. I was looking particularly at the U with the diuresis and the comma-like thing that they said was a variant, block variant of the U with the diuresis, and I don't think in our first pass we would have classified that as a variant, so I think we may need to go back and take another look at those.
Okay.
It's in the in the other document.
And then
yeah,
go from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're convening. How many minutes, Mirjana?
I don't know.
15 minutes.
What
it's 3:20 right now.
She's gonna say 20.
I'm going to say 1 half of an hour.
Should have went for 5.
Sorry. Tea and coffee break. 20 minutes.
20.
It is written there.
Okay.
But it's in the agenda.
Yeah, okay. It can be 15 if you are.
It already ended.
Okay, so
and because we have
no
you
coffee.
Missed it, Mirjana. I'm sorry, you missed it.
No.
No, please, no.
We have the lunch. After that, we have this very difficult discussion about the things which I'm not very familiar with. And now I really okay.
That's more different than we were.
But that's ours. That's our proposal.
That was our proposal.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
One easy fox.
One easy fox.